welcome to another episode of the Girl Unlimited podcast, the podcast and platform dedicated to seeing you break barriers, live fully, love abundantly, and be all you were created to be. As always, I am grateful and so thankful to you for taking the time out. Last week was the first time in over 6 months since the podcast started that I did not release an episode. And if you listen to my last episode, that's episode 27, you'll know that that was intentional and that I decided to cut down podcast release frequency to every other week. So from weekly to every other week. And I gave all the reasons, which I wouldn't want to go through again here. Do listen to episode 27 to get the full lowdown. And I remember I spoke about what to do if you feel stuck. And from time to time, we all feel stuck. So it is a good episode to listen to regardless. But in a nutshell, it is all in the interest of advancing the Girl Unlimited podcast and movement as a whole. I'm hoping we can resume weekly broadcasts again soon and possibly even move to twice a week broadcasts. That will be something I would love to do. That being said, it felt really odd not to release an episode last week. I actually really missed it. So definitely, I can't wait to go back to our usual weekly schedule, or even more than weekly, who knows? That being said, I have a fantastic, fun episode for you today. So today on the show, I have the immense pleasure of interviewing music producer, singer, songwriter, Lightning. People today know her as this multi-talented music creative, but little do they know that in her other lives, she was a language major, professional athlete, and even an editor and journalist working with some of the big time celebrities of our day. But her rich, multifaceted persona is why she is the well-rounded and extremely talented artist, music producer, and songwriter she's known to be today. This was such a fun interview, and Kat is wise as she is hilarious. I invite you to catch a glimpse into the life of the hardworking, grounded, and well-rounded creative that is Lightning. My name is T-Ari, and you're listening to the Girl Unlimited podcast. Hi, Kat. Thank you so much for coming on the Girl Unlimited podcast. It's so lovely to have you here.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, man. I remember the first time I came to know of you. It's a few years now. I actually listened to you on Premier Gospel Radio Station. Yeah. You know, so it was a show that was on at the time. I can't remember the name of the show. I think it was the Unsigned show. Yeah. And I was just so blown away, not just by your personality and how you came across in the interview, but it was also your song. And I was like, it was the Let It Rain song and how you just kept modulating to the end of the song. And I was like, and then you came out with the video and I was like, my head is going to explode. I love your creativity. I love that you show up different. I don't know what it is. I love the mark you always had on your cheek. And I guess I'm wondering, you would probably tell me later, but I guess that's how Lightning came about, I'm guessing. It was just different, and it was fresh, and it was new and exciting. And and to me, fits in perfectly with the Girl Unlimited. What we're trying to do with Girl Unlimited, which is to inspire women that are like us, to break barriers. And I feel you are breaking barriers in different ways, but I'm sure our listeners are going to hear all about it later on. So walk us through, some sort of timeline. When I read your bio, I was like, I couldn't believe you had done all the things you've done. I like, what? You know, so music first and then athletics and then philosophy and then editing. And then, I mean, you're back to full-time music. Walk us through all that. So what was Little Cat like?
It's been a lot. I feel like I was probably called Cat because I have 9 lives. I feel like maybe I'm on my 9th already. I was really quiet. Like, none of my friends now would ever believe it, but like, as a kid, I was like super quiet and super shy, and I just like played on my own. It was super weird. And I grew up in church, so my dad was a worship leader, and like a guitarist, singer, and then my mum was like also in the worship band as a singer, and then my brother like was super young but like was an amazing drummer from like, I mean, he had a drum kit when he was 1. Like, there's a video of like my first birthday and he's like drumming to Happy Birthday, and he is super in time. So like he was drumming, so like people in our church kind of knew us as like the Von Trapp family, you know, but like just not as many of us. And so like they discovered like I could sing when I was about 7. Like, my dad, like, they used to put me up at the front in church and sing sometimes, but most of the times I'll be sitting in the audience, congregation, just like watching my parents. But and then like we went to someone else's church, and I was supposed to be singing, and my dad like walked into the back room and I was with another girl, and I was like harmonizing with the girl at 7, like naturally. And my dad was like, okay. And then like, I got obsessed with harmony, which makes a lot of sense now as to like kind of what I do and what I'm good at. I was obsessed. Like, whenever the radio was on in the car, I'd like harmonize to it. Probably drove my parents absolutely mad, but hey, that's how it works. I kind of sang in church and stuff. And like, I was super, like super focused at school. Like, I'm an Enneagram 3, so I'm like, which is called the achiever, so like my worth is tied up in like how well I do. So like, I was a super perfectionist. Like, I got pulled in to a side room at school, and they told me to stop working so hard at secondary school. They're like, they were like, you need to relax, like, you're doing great, but you work too hard. Like, which is so weird. Why would they ever say that at school? Like, I think that's really weird. I was just like, no, I have to get 100% in everything. So we worked out that I could run like naturally in year 7. And so kind of straight away on the first, race I did, like I thought I was last, and it turned out I was 4th. I had no idea where I was going. Like, I knew nothing. And they were like, yeah, you're talented. And I was like, oh. So then they sent me to a running coach in St. Albans called George Harrison. And again, like today, he's been like one of the most influential people in my life. Like, he's amazing, amazing man. He's like around 80 now, and still going, like still killing it, like up the hills, you know, on a Saturday morning. So I kind of dropped music because like I ended up having to run like 6 days a week, and then ended up running for Great Britain and stuff. And so that kind of became my life. So I was taken out of school quite a lot to do like camps and stuff we had in Sheffield, and then abroad, like China and stuff like that. So I ended up, you know, right, really focusing on running. And then I had a treadmill accident, fell on a treadmill, and I had like major surgery on my hip. And just never recovered from that, basically. So that came crashing down whilst I was doing, I think, my GCSEs. Wow. And yeah, I was doing A-level French at the same time, because I was in language school, so we did everything early. So it was a bit weird. And then so I was like, oh. And then somehow, like, I got back into music, singing, like, in a soul close vocal harmony group. And then a jazz band, and then I think I was bored, so I picked up the sax and just taught myself. So that's how I started playing sax. I was just honestly really bored. I was just continued on the academic route, and I went to UCL, studied philosophy, and then accidentally became a musician.
Okay, so many things I want to say in just that little spill you gave us. For someone who is so, I mean, I'm I guess that makes a lot of sense now that I, you know, just looking at your career so far and how much you've achieved, you talked a lot about focus and you being, you know, a really focused person and, you know, overachiever and perfectionist. I think it makes perfect sense now, because
people have this impression about musicians, you know, we are always late, we're very lax, we like to wake up really, you know, yeah. We like to wake up really late. And here you are, I mean, just yesterday you were telling me that you had a 13-hour day. That yeah. was just, that's crazy, you know. And I'm just wondering, so like, for instance, when you had your treadmill accident, how do you feel when a journey has to end, like in that case? And because you were very focused on it, and I mean, who mm. knows what, you know, Cats would have been if mm. you had continued, you know, you were yeah. already, you know, representing Great Britain.
Yeah.
How do you usually feel, and how do you deal with, you know, when a path ends that way?
I don't think I did at the time. I don't think it really sunk in. Yeah, for a long time, because we kind of tried to rehab my hip and like had steroid injections and stuff. And like, but it was never said to me like this might never come back. So I was kind of under weird false pretenses that maybe I'd start running again, like even like 2 years after the operation or something. And then it just became like quite apparent. And like I had a muscle condition as well that they didn't know about at the time that also stopped me. I think it was when I got diagnosed with that actually it sunk in. Okay, no, this is over. But luckily, like at that time, I think because I'd switched my focus and I had something else to pour my energy into, which was music. And also, like for me, like I'm a Christian, so I believe like there is purpose in what happens. And for me, I think like the running thing, there was some toxicity in that environment anyway. Like it's an amazing sport, but you know, there's a lot around it. There's a lot of pressures. Especially on how you look and your body and stuff like that. And I feel like I kind of don't think I would have thrived if I'd have continued. Like, I think I would have been definitely successful, but would I have thrived as a person? I'm not sure. And I feel like it kind of, yeah, I've kind of seen the purpose in like moving into music and something that's, you know, longer term, more expressive. And yes, it has, it's very hard, you know, but in a different way and probably a slightly more productive way. So yeah, for me, I just use that like, okay, I see purpose in this and I think there's a purpose in this, and that's how I've got through it basically. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so university, why philosophy?
I asked myself this a lot. I actually wanted to be a translator. So I did like French like GCSE and A-level like 2 years early. And I did Italian GCSE and A-level in like 2 years from like scratch. And I was obsessed. Like I'd like translate Whitney Houston songs into French and, do you know what I mean, and stuff like that. Like I was obsessed. But I think the problem with doing it early is that then there was a big gap between like finishing my A-level and the time I would have gone to uni. And with languages, like you have to keep it up all the time. And so then I think the second thing was like I just like really enjoyed philosophy. I really enjoyed, like, found it super interesting, like real deep thought. Like that's just how I naturally am as a person. Mm-hmm. And what else was I gonna do? Because I didn't study music then. I wasn't a musician then. So that wasn't an option. So, and I was just really good at philosophy. So it was that or psychology. And I don't know, I ended up going for philosophy. I still don't know why.
Did you enjoy your time in university though? Would you do it again?
No. I would not study again. 3 years of deep philosophical thought when I walk out of lectures thinking I can't actually prove that I exist right now. It's like a lot. Like,
oh my God.
It's a lot. And it makes you quite depressed in a way, because you're just thinking so deeply about everything and you can't relax. And like, I feel like UCL, like at that time was like fourth best ranking in the world, right? So they're very much like, we're doing it the traditional way, you know? Whereas like King's, like, so basically my mum went to UCL, so she wouldn't let me go anywhere else. But realistically, like King's, like they got to do like, you know, philosophy of art and stuff like that. And I'd have been, you know, I think that's really cool. But no, we did it the traditional way. So I think it's an amazing institution. And it's an amazing, like, background and training and in thought, you know, and kind of, yeah, beliefs and other people's views and stuff like that. So definitely, like, it's been worth it. But I was crying at like 5 a.m. before my Wittgenstein exam in final year, because like even the lecturer couldn't tell us what he was saying, and I was like, how am I supposed to do an exam on this? I just wake up crying, and I'd be in the uni, I did nights, because there was no one in there. So I switched my like rhythm to night, and I've just been in there at 3 a.m, just like, oh, this is so hard. So, I mean, I got through it. We did it. But yeah, I wouldn't go back.
Would you, was university, considering that you're now doing music full time, if you were to turn back the clock, would you even do the whole university, forget the philosophy, maybe it was psychology, or maybe it was even music, would you go through that whole university stint 3 years again?
I would, yeah. I think it really makes you as a person. Like, it's the first time you leave home. Like, I left and like started living in London, and that's definitely the basis of like everything I'm doing now has sprung from, you know, me being at uni and London and kind of like being in the gospel, starting to lead the gospel choir there and like really getting into that. So I absolutely would, yeah, and I would recommend it, but I don't think it's necessary, you know. I think it depends what you do, but definitely leaving home and kind of branching out on your own and kind of forcing you to kind of talk to people and communicate and like meet new people and do new things, I think is invaluable. Yeah.
Where is home?
St. Albans.
Oh, home for you is not very far from home for me. Okay. So I live in Hertfordshire as well. So.
Oh, where are you?
I'm in Hemel. So just literally 20 minutes down the road. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay. Well, you've had this, you know, journey so far in music. Like, I mean, when I found you, it was quite a few years ago now. You were the singer-songwriter, musician, and then you've been through this transition. And yeah. Now that I've heard a bit of your background, I kind of see why. But yeah. When I say why, I kind of see how you would have, knowing your personality a bit more, I can see how that could have worked for you. But I'm just intrigued. You know, so singer-songwriter, musician, now you're wearing the hats of producer, and I saw another, executive produced albums, and you vocal direct, and I mean, yeah, you led gospel choirs in uni and all that, so I can see the vocal part, yeah. But the production and the engineering, was it as a result of another bout of boredom when you picked up the sax, or is it just, so what came up, how did that transformation happen?
I think it's like a supernatural transition for me. I think like being a musician, like I was a touring sax player and backing vocalist. So like, and like I was musical directing bands and stuff, which is in my opinion is live production. But the problem is like, I never really thought, my brother was a producer songwriter for years, but like it never even entered my mind that I could be a producer. Like, and I think it is because I'm a girl, I didn't see any women. Like I'd worked with producers, they're all men, you know, I'd worked with engineers, they're all men. Like I didn't see any women. So like, because really, if you think about it, like someone who can songwrite, someone who's like a, you know, a musician who's like been on the circuit and knows what they're doing, who can direct band members, it just makes for a producer. Absolutely. And someone who knows their way around a studio, like, you know, yeah, I've been like recording horns and like vocals for, you know, years. So yeah, I think for me, like that kind of route there was natural. And I'm definitely someone like, I always want the next challenge. And I don't like to stay in something too long, because I just, yeah, I do get a bit bored, and I always like to, you know, be pushing myself and challenging myself. So I think production for me was the next step for that, and I got forced into it, like, and then realized I could do it. Basically, someone made me, you know, produce up a song we wrote, and it went really well. And then I was like, oh, I maybe can do this, but I never knew before. So yeah, I just think it was a supernatural, you know, natural transition. And I think like with vocal engineering and vocal producing, like me being a singer and having had that background in gospel and like close vocal harmony choirs, you know, like I can hear what I want, and I can hear a voice, and I can know what a voice can do, and I know where, I know how to push a voice, being like, okay, lower your larynx, you know, and not most producers can't do that. So absolutely. It naturally just makes me you know, a natural vocal producer as well. So yeah, I just think it's been a supernatural transition to this next step, basically.
Oh wow. Now I know, where were you when I was looking for vocal directors?
I know. Probably wasn't doing it.
Amazing. Okay, well, I'm sure you kind of alluded to the fact anyway, but you've already mentioned that you are a female producer engineer in a predominantly male dominated industry, you know, which can be tough. So I guess I was curious to know what sort of challenges, if any, you've experienced. And you mentioned, you alluded to the fact that it's you know, the industry is tough. So what sort of challenges have you experienced? And you can just name one. And how have you overcome them?
So I think, like, there's definitely this thing of there is that subsect of men in the industry, and I'm sure in every industry, who kind of only work with you if they think they have a shot with you in terms of, like, you know, in that other relational way. So that's definitely, you know, an element to it. And I think with that, like, it's growing the wisdom to kind of spot it, you know, and being strong enough to be like, no, actually, and like walk out of the situations where you feel like it's not your talent that is coming first in the situation. So it's definitely kind of growing in confidence, but I think that is a thing. Like, I think men generally are more confident in the workplace than we as women are, and because I think we're taught that confidence isn't a female trait, you know. It's not something to be like, yes, I'm great, you know, whereas men, like, yeah, they're taught, yes, so you're great, blah, blah, blah. Whereas we're like, oh, hi, I know. And I think that is a massive thing, because with production, like, every decision, like, you're in the room and you're kind of leading the session, you've got to be confident, you know, it all kind of revolves around what you're doing. So that's been a massive thing for me, is to learn to be confident. So I think that's very, and kind of to not feel manly doing it.
Yeah, that is okay to be a girl and still kick ass. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I can still be girly and, you know, be good.
Yeah.
Something that's like quite male. I guess that.
I hear you. There's, I don't know if you've heard this. There's this saying, or it wasn't a quote, but statistics that show that men will apply for a role if they meet the criteria 60% of the way.
Yeah.
But women will not apply for that position unless they meet 100% of the criteria.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, you know, but one of the things I've learned from what you just said, because you were in those positions, whether you felt confident or not, you had to do it. So sometimes I think many women wait to feel confident before they get themselves in the position. But really, and what I am learning from my own personal journey as a girl unlimited is to not wait for the feeling of confidence and just go. And as it turns out, the more you do it, the more confident you begin to feel, because you now have experience to, like, look back on and say, well, I did that. Someone I actually heard of, she suggests or advises that people have this, a book of wins, where you write down your wins. And then when you're having a moment, you know, one of those times when you're like, I can't do this, you go pull up either something, this file on your phone, or a hard copy. If you're a hard copy girl like me, I have journals everywhere, and just look through it and, like, okay, I did that time, and just bring it to your remembrance, all that you have accomplished. So I think anyone listening to you now will know that you are multi-talented and gifted in so many ways. I kind of feel like this situation is like the, you know, the parable of the talents, where some people are given five and some people are given two and some people are given one. I think you're definitely in the five category. So I'm wondering, where do you get all this inspiration from? So the songs you write, I've listened to some of them and I'm like, how does she even think about those things?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, life, like, definitely. Life puts me through a lot. And the only, like, honestly, thank God for writing, because, like, it's definitely therapy. Like, I think it's incredible, like, when you turn a really hard situation, something that's really, you know, hurt you, into a song, you know, and that's been great. Other, like, just listening to, like, even like live music and stuff, like, really kind of drives me, like, listening to that, I'm like, okay, I feel inspired again. Twitter is hilarious. People go, like, Twitter is amazing. Like, people go through a lot. Charlie Puth says that most of his songs come from, he reads the Agony Aunt pages of magazines.
That is a very good mining place to go for. Oh man, that's such a good one. I'm stealing that actually.
And I was like, damn. And I think like Twitter's probably the new age version of that. Yeah. So like, yeah, just like keep like listening to music and like, yeah, life. Basically.
A lot of people do mention, and I mean, I found a lot of solace from journaling, which I think is another way of, you know, music is songwriting is another way of self-expression. And when I was much younger, it was poetry for me, because I know what you're saying. When life puts you through the ringer, you need some sort of outlet to express and pour out. Some people cry. Some people do both, cry and write.
I'm not a crier. I don't naturally cry.
Is it?
Yeah. Like, I think I counted, like, I cried twice this year.
Interesting.
Yeah. I was in, like, well, yeah, 2021. Yeah, I just don't naturally cry. So I guess I just have to write it instead.
Yeah. So you put all that into. I'm a huge crier. It's terrible. I cry.
That's bad.
What?
That's good.
No, that's it's good. Not. It's embarrassing. Half the time is embarrassing. I cry, you know, watching movies. I cry. I do this thing I call association crying, where someone cries and I cry because the person is crying. It's terrible. For many years, in the last few years, I've kind of tried to own it.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, okay, I'm a crier. What do I do?
It's super empathetic. Like, if you can do that, like, you're incredibly empathetic, and like, so many people, like, that's an amazing thing as a human, in my opinion.
Oh,
yeah, cry. I wish I could cry more. I'm like, I just need to cry, and I can't cry, and I'm like, oh, fine.
I lead worship in church, and sometimes it is because I can't cry and sing, so
yeah, it's really hard.
I find myself most of the time having to, you know, try and hold back my tears, or, you know, I mean, obviously over the years you learn how to manage things, but it is something, like I said, I'm still working through and still getting used to. My kids now, I'm like the laughing stock of my home. So we're watching something and I start to cry. And then when anything emotional on TV, they all look to me and like, mom's crying. Anyway, so I mean, walk us through what a journey looks like for you from blank page to a ready piece of work. How does that look like? I'm sure it's different, but it's very related to the last question. But
yeah, so like typically, if I'm going to go for like 6 times out of 10, I'll kind of like sit down at the piano generally, and like, might not be a piano sound, you know, it might be a guitar sound or whatever, but like, I'll start kind of playing chords and movement or like patterns.
Wait. You talked about being a sax player. So how many instruments do you play?
Oh, I dabble in a lot.
Okay.
I'm on a learning curve at the moment. So I'm like, actually, like, because I'm someone who, like, I'm self-taught in everything. Like, no one's really sat down and taught me. And I tend to learn well that way. But like, now I'm like, okay, I need to learn quickly. So like, I can play some keys. I can play some bass. I've done like, yeah, trumpet and trombone and sax on quite a few records. I can play a bit of flute. It makes me super dizzy though. I guess those.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. I only said it because you were talking about, you know, getting on the piano. So please go ahead.
So normally I kind of start on piano and just kind of start going on like chords and movements or patterns. And like, I'll first of all ask myself how I'm feeling, or like if I'm writing with other people, how we're feeling. If someone comes in, I'm like, oh, I'm super depressed. I'm like, we're writing a sad song today. I start doing that, like moving that feel good. And then like just start like kind of humming melodies and kind of, sorting melodies over that. And then kind of a lot of the times, like song concepts will come out of like the conversation that's happened just before we started. For me, like every writing session, we start just talking. Or like I start playing a song, like a funny song, and like dancing when people come in the room. That's what mood I'm in. So kind of like the concept generally comes out of that, or like kind of something that's mumbled or something. I don't like to really overthink concepts. I think they do come quite naturally. It's kind of like getting the melodies down and then kind of start putting words to that. And then kind of, get the structure and then record the vocals and then like start producing up the track around it. And then at the end of the day, you have a song that didn't exist before, which I think is like quite magic.
It is magic. It is absolute magic. I mean, it's amazing just going from not having anything. And you said something that was very important. I had two ideas running through my head. You talked about the dancing, and I did watch a clip of you dancing. I was like, this is actually pretty decent. Pretty decent. And I was serious. I was like, she's pretty decent. But you also talked about not overthinking the process. And I think that's probably one of the problems a lot of creatives encounter. The ones that seem in air quotes, I'm doing air quotes, more successful in the sense of output are people who do not overthink the process. They just like, and maybe that comes with time. I don't know. But, you know, when you've done this over and over and over and over and over, I mean, I think it was the post you put out saying that you had worked on hundreds of production. If you overthink it, you don't have the capacity to do that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I definitely think there is a sense of it does come with experience. Mm. You kind of learn, like, now I'm like, oh, some of the best songs that I've written and that I've done the best have come in, like, you know, 30 minutes. And sometimes, like, at the end of the session when everyone wants to go home because we've written a song, I'm like, nah, let's give ourselves 30 minutes and whatever comes out in that 30 minutes, like, that's the track. And a lot of the times that is better than the one that we've just spent 6-7 hours on, because it's just natural. Like, it doesn't always work like that, but... you know, there is a sense of that because we're just not overthinking it. And like they say, like, there's a book on creativity. I can't remember what it's called. I'll find you the thing. But basically, it's like creativity only comes from emptiness. And when you're overthinking, you're crowding that empty and that blank space. You've got to be like, stillness is really the basis of creativity and silence. So if we're overthinking it, then we kind of don't leave room for that silence, for that voice to come through. And I definitely think there is a lot in there.
I agree.
Yeah. So, yeah, sometimes, yeah, it's learning not to overthink it, but we all have our days where we're just like, oh, is that good enough, you know?
Yeah.
But it helps with someone else in the room, you know, being like, no, that's sick. Or like, no, that's terrible. You know, you have to be able to be like, that was terrible. Like, sometimes I'll come out with a line and then, like, it leaves my mouth and I'm just like, oh, that is terrible. But, you know, you have to be able to laugh at yourself and, like, you know, that creates a good environment and stuff. So, yeah.
Oh, I love what you're saying. It's because I know I have a tendency to overthink things that I actually set myself. Well, I got a couple of other people on the journey with me, but this year I set myself a target to write every day. So, because what you've just explained cuts across so many other, you know, not just the music industry, other industries or other types of writing or creative outputs. So that's, if it's blog posts you want to write every day, if it is any piece of writing, like what I set for myself this year, writing to do this year, is to write something every day, whether that's a song or whether that's a post, whether that's a poem, whether that is so literally anything. The only thing that doesn't fall under that remit is journaling, because journaling is kind of more self-awareness type writing. So sometimes music could come from it, but, you know, generally speaking, you're concentrating more on self-awareness and self-awareness more, like, and so it's inflection, so reflection, and then, so that's why, like, journaling maybe not, but everything else, you know, anything that looks like writing, short stories, a book, an outline. When you overthink things, like you rightly said, I think there's a lot of truth in what the fact that it is it's holding stillness and silence in the space. It's just like a blank piece of paper, really, isn't it?
Because I found that fascinating when I read that. I was like,
I'd love the name of the book. We read a lot. I have a little book club as well. I love to read. So a book like that, I'll be really, really interested in.
Yeah, something like The Secret of the Highly Creative Thinker or something. Yeah, right. I'll send it to you.
All right, okay, perfect. Okay, so again, tough industry.
Yeah.
We are still going through a pandemic. And I know the music industry particularly was hardest hit for many reasons, because, you know, there's the performance side of things. We couldn't gather. And how did you manage to keep yourself sane through that period? I know you alluded to the fact that life throws you a lot of tough times, and I didn't want to pry too much, but I was just wondering, because I know the period of the pandemic, I've had a couple of musicians on the show already, and I know this period has been particularly tough. How have you managed to stay sane?
Yeah, I think when it all hit, I think within 2 weeks I lost about £50,000 of work.
My goodness.
Which is wild, you know? And like to the point where I was like, wow, like this is amazing. And I remember like I didn't have a fridge. I didn't have a working fridge where I was living. So I went back to my parents' house because I was like, I'm not gonna survive. And I had £400 in my bank account. And like I still had to pay my studio rent even though I couldn't get there because we weren't allowed to travel. It's in Ealing, you know, and I was in St. Albans. And I was like, okay, this is fun. And then like so PPL is like a performance royalties. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was in the Morrison's queue, you know, with a scarf around my face back when they didn't think masks worked or yeah, all that. And I looked at my bank account and suddenly I was like, sorry, what? Like there was money in it. And I was like, where, what? Sorry, what? And then it said PPL and I was like, this must be a mistake. And then I like logged in and it was like, real? And I was like, mate, that saved me. For those for the lockdown one, you know, because it was getting deep. And I was like, yeah, this is horrible. But yeah, I mean, things like that, like, and then just like accepting of the situation, like, cool, this is what it is. You know, like I've lost loads of money, like no one's touring, no one's gigging. Like, and even songs that were supposed to be coming out got put on hold because, you know, a lot of them are like, you can't really release an upbeat, like happy party song because A, the clubs are shut, mm-hmm. you know, and like no one's partying and no one's happy. Mm-hmm. So like they, like even in the recording side, and then you can do sessions. I think for me, like I was in a massively lucky position in that I can create just by myself, like being able to produce, songwrite and sing. And I think most people weren't lucky, you know, lucky in that situation. Mm. But yeah, like a lot of technology was used, you know, people were using Zoom and stuff. Mm. But yeah, I think it was like, it was a lot, but like if I dwelled in it, you know, it would have been like, oh, I'm depressed. But instead I just got up every day, like, and had a two second really commute to the studio in the garden. I like bought some speakers and just like made a studio in my parents' garden. And I just went there every day. And so I kind of kept some sense of normality, you know, in that I was still working, even though like, you know, who knows where it was going or what it was doing, but like I was still, you know, developing. And so I went for walks, and walking is my sanity. I love a walk, especially at nighttime, which is slightly dangerous, but hey. So yeah, like it was just like, yeah, just focus on like the now, you know, and creating in the now. And I think music definitely saved me. And so did Netflix. I rewatched the whole of Moesha. Oh, so good. Like, you know, things like that, like kind of bring you back to like happier times. Mm. Yeah, so it was just a concentration and just, yeah, luckily I was able to just create and I just focused on that.
Oh, wow. We have that in common. I love to walk, but not at nights. That's the only difference. I love to walk in the mornings. Sometimes I do afternoons as well. As long as it's not really hot. I don't mind the cold that much. As long as it's not hot or it's not rainy or icy. Because I'm always worried that I'm going to slip and fall or something. So I don't like walking in ice. Anyway, so as a person who is in music again, I know to get to the level you've gotten to, you've had to deal with disappointments.
Mm-hmm.
being in the music industry, I know what that's like sometimes. And I'm just wondering how you seem like a very, from what I've heard about you so far, and it's such a pleasure to meet you and talk to you, because I'm listening to someone who is obviously very grounded, not only in her faith, but someone who, you know, is clued on in terms of, you kind of have some things in your kitty to help you deal with this tough times. I don't know if that's come as a result of actually going through the tough times or as a result, or you've like preloaded it before you experience those times. But how do you deal with disappointments?
I mean, yeah, it's hard. I think for me, surrounding myself with people who are in the same boat is incredible. Like getting wisdom from people who are ahead of you in the journey. And they all said like, you know, like, I'll be, like my brother kind of has come before me, you know, he's been actually doing what I do now for like 12, 13 years ahead of me, you know, and he was like, he'll be like, yeah, well, I got rejected 3 times today. You know, and he's amazing. And he's like, that is how it goes. And kind of understanding that everyone gets rejected. Like, you hear those stories, you know, even that Squid Games, like, he's been writing it for 10 years and got rejected by everyone. Like, the amount of people who got, like, Rent, like, was rejected for, you know, 5-6 years by everyone. Like, you know, and even like massive songs, like, I think New Rules by Dua Lipa was written on a Little Mix camp, and then that got passed around and rejected, you know, like, everyone, even things that are massive, got rejected. So, like, you're not exempt from that. And a lot of the time, like, I kind of just take it like, okay, cool, this wasn't my time, you know. And it is sometimes it is hard to keep the faith that your time is coming, especially when you see people around you kind of move up and stuff like this. But, like, you just have to keep, if you feel like this is the talent that you were given and this is what, you know, you feel like that this is where you're meant to be and you can't really imagine doing other things, then, like, that kind of alone, you know, will kind of pull you back off the edge, you know? Like, everyone's definitely going to get close to the edge, but you have to kind of pull yourself back. And for me, like, it's looking at things of, like, where things didn't work out, like my running career, and then being like, well, I'm, you know, in a better position now, like, I personally think. And that was a big, you know, dip for me. So, yeah, looking back at past experience and being like, okay, cool, there is purpose in this. And you just have to keep going. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, cool, close the book, go to sleep, start the next day, let's go again. And as long as you kind of keep that and have rest when you need to. This is what I'm learning now, because I've never been someone who does rest. And I find it really hard. But, like, sometimes it's okay to be sad for a bit and rest for a bit, you know? And then, like, pick yourself up. And, like, yeah, I've got amazing encouragers around me. Like, some of my friends, you know, really, truly believe in me. And their belief keeps me believing. Wow. Really, more than belief in myself. I think God's really put those kind of people around me because he knows, oh, this girl doesn't really believe in herself. So, like, let's put people who really do and who I admire as, you know, in their field. Mm. So, yeah, it's like surrounding yourself with people, you know, who are your people, I think is massively important.
That is so true. That is key. And I find that that's one thing, especially with creatives, is what is probably missing in a lot of lives, because it can be a very lonely road. And, you know, but if you can surround yourself with people who can encourage you, or people that, like you said, just having that army, it doesn't have to be, which is one of the reasons, again, I set up Girl Unlimited, because I know how very lonely that road can be, especially as a woman trying to break barriers and trying to just work. If you choose to walk in purpose, you will have to break some barriers, you will have to defy some limits, you will have to, if you want to maximize your potential, you will have to do those things. And sometimes it's very difficult to do, and sometimes you don't feel you have the energy or the strength or the confidence or the courage to do them. So sometimes it's kind of cheating, you know, in air quotes a little bit, by just having a group of people, a community, no matter how small it is, that you can call on and that you can draw strength from. And I think that is a superhero's ammunition, as it were. You know, if you're going to do stuff in the world, you definitely, it's crucial you have people that believe in you. So I totally get that. And now, some of our listeners obviously have carried dreams, you know, to do music or any other creative profession full time. And so how, in your opinion, can they make that transition? Because I'm guessing you haven't always been full time. No. Maybe tell us, did you go straight from uni into doing full time music, or did you work for a little bit? Lots of people, definitely many people listening to this podcast, are probably still within a 9-to-5 and, you know, are holding this dream of wanting to be lightning one day. So what does that, how would you advise they go about that transition?
I think there's two things. So the first thing I want to say is, and I observed this when I was running, the people who then became, like, who were incredibly talented and then managed to become full-time runners started to not do as well because their whole focus and their whole world was running. And I see that sometimes with creatives as well. It's like, actually, like, what you think you want, which is to do something 100% of the time, might actually suck the life out of it for you. Like, my brother always said he didn't want to study music at uni because it would, you know, because like then everything becomes that, and you become less creative. And I do think there is something in that. So I think a lot of people shun the 9 to 5 or they shun the side hustle. But actually, that might be the thing that keeps you creative and keeps you burning that, you know? Sometimes it's not being able to fully have something that keeps your passion burning for it. So I think there's one thing to question there, you know? And the other thing, I mean, I started like being paid to sing when I was at uni. So in my final year, I kind of joined a professional gospel group and I started being paid for that. But obviously it wasn't like a, like, you know, you can't, it's not a full-time salary. So I managed to pick up randomly like a job as a book editor for a couple of publications. Again, ridiculous. Do I know what I'm doing? No. I remember sitting in meetings all because it was like corporate sponsored and stuff. There's a lot of celebrities involved. And here's like little me walking in as the editor. And they'd all look at me like, are you joking? but hey, it worked out. So yeah, like obviously like I had to do that. Which actually was great because, you know, I actually really enjoyed it. Got to do some music journalism and that, you know, like putting two passions together, you know, is interesting. And then really, like, I worked out, like, as a sax player, I can earn more than I could as a singer. As a female sax player who plays like I do, like a lot of people say, like, I play quite, I think a lot of people have a jazz background as as sax players. And like I'm very much like pop gospel R&B, you know, and that kind of works quite well in certain circuits. And obviously, yes, I'm a girl and it's probably been the one time that being a female has actually been beneficial. Yeah. And, you know, why not? Like, it's not like I'm bad. Do you know what I mean? Like people still pick me like when they can choose a man, you know, a lot of the time. And obviously some men get picked over me sometimes. Absolutely fine. They're better. You know, if they're better, great. Yeah, so I kind of really worked out where the gap in the market was. And so I kind of used that income to then, you know, fund like the songwriting part and and that kind of stuff that I was doing and to fund my studio. Until then, obviously, just experience and more time then meant I started to be, you know, being paid as a songwriter or a producer. And, you know, my income kind of starts to like level out. Or, you know, now I might make more as a producer or whatever. So it's definitely time just using any other skill, you know, like, you might want to be like a full-time artist, but you, if you can sing, go and, you know, gig as a singer and get money as a singer. Or if you can play keys, you know, like I think sometimes it's about looking at what you can do within the thing that you love in order to help you and like gain like the 10,000 hours, you know, of, you know, to become like the best at what you do. Yeah, so I think maybe it's not looking so directly down one path, but looking at the branches around it. And just really going for it and, you know, being as good as you can, practicing as much as you can and just, you know, really like being great and being brave and putting yourself out there, you know, meeting people. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. There was a podcast I actually listened to not too long ago and the guest said something that stuck with me since I heard it. She said, don't be afraid to modify the dream.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes you will have to, maybe for the time being, but don't be afraid to modify the dream. So, and I've taken that on board, especially when, you know, things haven't really worked out the way I thought it was going to work out. And I also appreciate what you said, which is the fact that, you know, don't despise even the 9 to 5, because it is serving a purpose at the time that you are in that 9 to 5. For one, and I know this personally, it will at least help fund lots of the projects that you know you need to fund at that point in time. I know a very popular, I mean, she's very popular now as a coach and a public speaker and all that, but she says that when she started her business, unlike other people who just literally threw this themselves in, and that might work for some people, you know, they go cold turkey and then just rough it out and just, you know, do that way. But she said that she wasn't that sort of person. She needed to have something going, whether that was bartending, whether that was waitressing, whether that was, you know, so just doing something that helped with the bills and, you know, all that bits and bobs while she honed her craft.
Mm-hmm.
till she got to the point where she didn't need to do that, know, that stuff anymore. So I think, you know, the fact that I think some people actually feel like they are cheating their dreams and goals when they do these other things. And I'm like, no, you're not. You're giving it wings, actually. Yeah. That's what you're doing. That's
as long
what
as
you're doing.
Taking the time, you know, to still do the other thing.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like of course, like it can get tiring. But like if you want, in my opinion, if you do want something enough, you will take that extra time to do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that's actually proof. What you just said right now is actually proof. Do you really want that thing? Like you said, some people feel like, oh, I want this thing so much, 100%. And then they find it actually sucks the life out of it. And you're absolutely correct. I mean, I know that was my case. You know, I really, really wanted to pursue music 100% full time. And then I found that I didn't love it as much as I thought I would, you know, and and I think that's why tests are really good. You know, so, you know, you need to go through those rough patches to really determine. They're like a good test to figure out whether this is the path you really want to go down or whether it's not. So amazing stuff.
Okay. You know, and I know so many people who, say that they want something and then they get the opportunity and they just don't work hard and they just kind of blow it, and you're like, you didn't want it, you know, you can't really want it. Yeah, you can't want it enough, like if you're not going to do the hard things.
So. No, it makes perfect sense. So what's one thing, I like to ask this question from time to time, even though you've said so much and I've learned so much from you, just, you know, listening to you, I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, but what's one thing that you haven't said that you wish people knew about you, but they don't know?
Interesting. I don't know. I mean, I'm addicted to chocolate. So, you know, if there are any people who want to get in my good books, send me chocolate. And
what's your favorite flavor? You never know.
Oh, so, okay. So if it's hot chocolate, a salted caramel, and if it's actual chocolate, you've got to melt galaxy, but melted in the microwave for around 20 to 25 seconds, depending on your microwave. Don't burn it. I've done that way too. I've set it on fire. It's been a lot.
Oh my God.
So I guess that.
I just had this image in my mind of you taking this lighter and putting it on a chocolate bar and it just going up in flames.
I would have tried that if I had a lighter. Most of the time I can't find my light, you know, my lighter. I like love candles. I don't like do any bars without there being candles, although I did set my hair on fire on Christmas Day. I can never find my lighter. So yeah, I would if I could.
There's one question I haven't asked yet, which I alluded to earlier, but it just came to my mind now, and I would hate not to ask it. And that is your amazing name, Lightning. I have a thing for butterflies. So I've got a brand because I do copywriting on the side. So I call the brand the Butterfly Copy. I've got a tattoo on my leg. It's a couple of tattoos on my leg and they are butterflies as well. So I think I have a thing for butterflies. I think anybody who knows me probably knows that, probably doesn't know that. But do you have a thing for lightning?
I'm like really weather. I love rain. Like if it's raining, I will choose to go out. You said you don't like doing walks in the rain. I absolutely love it. Favorite storms are my favorite weather. Like where I live now, it's incredible because like it's like between two buildings, so it creates kind of like a funnel. So when it storms, like all the rain just like smashes down the middle. It all gets funneled into the middle, and like it's great. Like So I'm like a real big fan of storms. I don't know why they make. That's probably the most relaxed I feel is in a storm. Probably says a lot about me.
Yes!
But I love a storm. And also, like, do you remember Gladiators?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so there was a female gladiator called Lightning. And I feel like I'm quite gladiator in, like, obviously, like, coming from a sport background. Mm. Also, I just feel quite very warrior, you know? I feel like that's kind of my outlook on life. It's like, let's fight, let's go, you know? Even when it's hard, like, let's go. Mm. So I feel like that really represents me. Basically, yeah.
Oh, I really love that. I find people very interesting. It's one of the reasons I started Girl Unlimited again. One of the many reasons I'm having the interview format, because you learn so much. And I find our uniquenesses, if there's a word like that, or how different we are, very intriguing. You know, I said I wouldn't go. I mean, not that I couldn't, but I'd rather not. I prefer the sun. Maybe that's because I'm originally Nigerian. So
of course,
I grew up in a tropical, you know, environment. So the sun calls out to me. A couple of days, it was really sunny. And my daughter woke up and she was like, she was wondering why it was so sunny. She was like, oh, mom is going to go out on a walk today because it was sunny, because she knows I love the sun. I don't like the heat as much, but I love the sun.
Okay.
And you like to go out. You like storms. And most people I know are afraid of storms. That's just amazing.
Yeah, everyone hates them. I love, oh, please get, like, I want it to storm more. Like, this is why I can never live. You know, everyone's like, oh, I want to live in LA or like a warm country. And I'm like, nah, man, give me storms. Give me England. Give me torrential rain. I'm actually upset it's not rained more recently, if I'm honest. January, and it's kind of sunny.
Okay, Kat. So what is the best advice you've ever received?
So I had the extreme pleasure of, when I was editing one of the publications, it was like a 100 most influential disabled people. And I got to interview. So yeah, I got to interview quite a lot of them. And a lot of them, I asked them kind of like, yeah, what is your mantra? And what's the thing that keeps you going? I'm going to send it to you because it's so good. Like, it's really inspiring and really interesting.
Please.
But one of them was like, I was like, I've always been told feel the fear and do it anyway. And I know loads of people probably have heard that phrase. And it's like so true, you know, like, a lot of the times, like, oh, of course I don't feel like, a lot of the times, like, even walking into a session, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I don't think I can do it, you know, like, I don't know what's going to come out, like, I don't, but, like, you just have, like, I just, yeah, cool, I'm afraid, but hey, let's do it anyway, you know, like, what's the worst that can happen? I'll look like a fool and they won't work with me again, but, oh well, on to the next. Yeah, like, and I think that's a big thing, like, I think I have been afraid to do, like, a lot of the things that I've done or that I do, like, at one point, like, every time I walked on stage, like when I was playing sax first, like, I'm not tall. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, it's like suddenly, like, I'm on stage with a band and like, I just have to make it work. And yeah, like, it's scary. But I think if I hadn't have done all that scary stuff, I wouldn't, you know, be as happy as I am doing what I'm doing now. So I think, yeah, like, it's natural to be afraid, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it. And I think a lot of people use that fear to be like, oh no, I'm not going to do it. You know, I'm afraid of flying. I was touring and flying every weekend. Like, I'm deathly afraid of flying. I'll be up there thinking I'm going to die the whole time, you know?
Is it?
Yeah, but I'm still on that plane sitting there. And anyone looking at me wouldn't know. But if you heard what was going on in my head. So, yeah, like I think I'm quite good at putting myself in, like, fearful situations. I don't know if that's a good thing. But, yeah.
It's an amazing thing. It's just like your love for storms. You run headlong into the storms.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Or override that feeling and, like, yeah, cool, you're afraid, but doesn't mean you can not do it, so just do it. And the best things come out of your uncomfortable zone, you know, like, being in your comfort zone can only reap the same circle.
Absolutely.
So you have to massively move outside of that, and then, like, all the positive, like, all the best things, if you look at your life, everything that's great came from you being uncomfortable, I'm pretty sure.
Absolutely.
So you have 100%. To continue with that, you know.
That is so true. You talked about being afraid when you step out to play sax. Do you read music by any chance?
Yes.
I'm sure you had to learn that as well.
I did, yeah. I'm not amazing at it, like, because I'm a very ear, I think, because being a singer and, like, harmony and stuff like that, I'm very ear focused, and, like, not being taught as well, like, so yeah, I had to just kind of, like, yeah, get by on reading. But I used to score for big bands and stuff, so I think that kind of helped on that side. But still, like, I mean, after the pandemic, I didn't play sax for a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
And I suddenly got shoved, you know, shoved on set. I hadn't read music in ages. And, like, me and the trumpet player looking at each other like,
what are we doing?
But we're still there, you know, and no one kicked us off. So here we are.
Oh, this has been one of, I keep saying this for literally every interview I've had, but I've loved it. This, because for me, it is also, as much as I'm the one doing the interviewing and, you know, it's on the platform that I set up, I feel like I get front row seats to the lives of all these individuals, as amazing as you, who, you know, to just pour out from their, you know, the depths of their wisdom and just talk about their lives. And I feel like I get front row seats to learning all these things before anyone else gets to hear it. So I feel like I'm the one benefiting even more than our listeners. And that's just amazing. I just thank you so much for taking the time. It's been an amazing interview. I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
But it's far exceeded my expectations, to be 100% honest with you. So what's next for you? You talked about not liking to stay in one sphere of thing for too long, or not wanting to, you know, stay in an area for too long. So what's next for you?
Might join the circus. No, I'm joking. I don't know. For me this year, like, I really want to follow like what I'm passionate about in terms of like music, in terms of genre and stuff like that, and production. And like, I'm really in a learning phase, you know. I want to be amazing at guitar now. Like, I've never, you know, learned guitar, so like, you know, stuff like that. Like, I'm really, yeah, I know the kind of producer artist I want to be, and there's a lot of learning, and I'm learning to mix and master, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, I think definitely like learning a lot more, you know, honing my craft as much as possible. And yeah, just like making music that really makes me feel, you know, that's my focus for this year, is emotion driven.
What kind of music are you trying to create?
Just like, thing is, I think in every genre, like, there is music that makes you feel, do you know what I mean? And I think like a lot of the time we have kind of got away from it in the music industry and just, you know, hitting up things that bang. But like, for me, like I think there's a good wave of R&B at the moment that's really, you know, kept that you know, emotion. And and like, there are some dance tracks that are super emotional. There's one called Breaking Me by Topic, wow, the acoustic version of that is like, oh, you know. Yeah, so yeah, that's kind of my focus, like, make people cry or smile or dance, that's it.
It's funny that you've mentioned R&B quite a few times in this interview. Oh. because I feel like that genre is, I don't know how to express it. I feel like it's not been given the, I'm not necessarily one of the biggest fans, but my husband is, and he was when I met him.
Yeah.
Still is. We know, we hear an R&B track and I'm like, ooh, there was a challenge. I don't know if you knew about it going on Instagram.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago. It's Evan Campbell, Can We Talk? Hashtag thing. And it was just, we had so much fun just listening to the entries and, you know, just hearing the riffs and runs. I'm terrible with riffs and runs. I can't do them to save my life, which is probably one of the reasons I'm like, oh, I'd stuck my nose up to R&B.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Deep down inside of me, I'm envious that I can't do riffs and runs. But my husband loves them. He whistles in riffs and runs. It's ridiculous. And I'm like, so just going through that, but I feel like R&B hasn't been given the sort of attention that it should be given. Because like you said, it's something so emotional and very, I mean, a couple of weeks ago we stumbled on some work that, so more of the latest work that what's her name, Toni Braxton did, you know. So obviously she's old time. I remember Toni Braxton from my secondary school years, and I didn't think she was doing any, you know, any new work, but the tracks I listened to were probably just a couple of years old, and I was like, oh my goodness gracious, this woman is still killing it, you know. And she's stuck to that genre, you know. And it's still very sultry and very pure and very, I don't know, you use the word emotional, so it's interesting to see. It's and to hear someone like you, you know, obviously I've always seen R&B as a very American you know, genre, but to hear someone in Great Britain, you know, just loving the genre and going for it.
There are people, like, I feel like, yes, it's definitely bigger in America, and I mean it kind of, you know, stemmed from there. And it's definitely not given, you know, the like, we have artists like Sinead Harnett, like, you know, like Neo and stuff, like, they're incredible, you know, incredible artists. And like, even in my opinion, Jasmine Sullivan is one of the best singers of all time. And she's never been given her flowers, you know, and only now like a mass of people, you know, who were into that genre, and like, oh, Jasmine, I'm like, where have you been? Like, she made, like, she's the only one who's ever made me cry when I've gone to see her live, you know? Wow. Yeah, incredible. And I think it should, yeah, it should definitely be given more attention than it is. Like, even in the Brits category, they put pop and R&B together, which is ridiculous. They are not.
Why do you think that is, though? Why isn't it getting the attention it deserves? I know this is going way off topic, but
yeah. I mean, I think R&B had a massive wave in like the 90s, noughties, didn't it? Yeah. Like, that was like the pop music of the time. And I think like genres definitely come in ebbs and flows. Like, at the moment, you know, it's like dance and like trap or drill, like the leading things. So then like the record labels jump on that and that's what they push instead of like pushing all genres. They're like, well, where's the market at the moment? You know, that's where it is. And I think like there's a lot of things in R&B where it's like singers. And I think people like us who were singers really appreciate that. Mm. I think of general people don't kind of get it as much and kind of don't see that, like, you know, the incredibleness of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot. Yeah, I think there's a lot to do with that.
Oh, I hear you. Oh, well, I know I need to end the interview, so I'm going to end it. I'm going to end it, guys. Don't worry, I'm not going to keep you for much longer. So where can people find or connect with you, Kat?
So my Instagram is mainly what I use, and it's at It's Lightning, so ITSLITENING. So yeah, I don't spell lightning normal, because otherwise you'd just find lightning when you Googled it.
Yeah, I know.
So basically, find me there.
Perfect. Oh, thank you so much for taking the time, for sharing your wisdom, your experience, you're such a wise woman, and, you know, very knowledgeable, and, you know, very good at what you do. And I think our listeners are going to benefit so much from listening to this episode. So thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
You, my friend, are a total rock legend for listening to this episode to the end. I hope you found value in it. And if you did, would you do me a quick favor? Would you rate and review this podcast on the platform you're listening? And if the platform you're listening doesn't have the facility to rate and review, then please share the episode with your friends and your loved ones. It would go such a long way in helping spread the word of this podcast. And until next time, remember, you're a unique, remarkably created person with a God-given purpose and unlimited potential. The question is, what are you going to do about it?
That nothing will become of me, that I'll never come to anything but I rise, rise. Yes, you might have given up on me, 'cause you couldn't see what I see.